on 1116 SEN, The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw and Jamie McMillan.
That's not bad for J-Mac. Straight. He's got his own opener at SEN. He's obviously a regular. Good evening, Jamie.
Hey, g'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming into the studio. And were you down at Simmons Stadium on the weekend?
I was. I was up in the stands. Very cold, but it was nice to get the win. It certainly heated things up a little.
Well, it's a long drive when you're not playing, but it's a shorter drive on the way back when the boys really, very professionally in that last quarter, got the job done.
Yeah, it's I've been at the footy club for 6 years, and I don't think we've won there for eight, so I've never really had an enjoyable trip back from Simmons Stadium, but yesterday was certainly a shorter one with much more to talk about on the ride home.
You're a late change. You don't have to, but are you at liberty to divulge the reason? Because a couple of reasons. Part A, it'd be interesting, and B, the two boys that came in, Jacobs again has been a late inclusion, and both times has played very well. And of course, Trent Dumont debuted down there. So, are you right to go this week?
Yeah, well, there's a few hurdles to overcome just yet, but I did train last Thursday and I got through that really well. And then we had the Friday off, and Saturday I just came in for our day before the game, little run around, and I was a little bit sore still in the Achilles, which has sort of been bugging me a little bit for the last few weeks.
The last year, was it last year?
Oh, no, so I broke my leg last year.
Oh, so it's a broken leg last year.
Last year, so yeah, now it's the Achilles. It's just sort of, it's nothing too serious, but it's something that you don't really want to muck around with, especially after Andrew Swallows missed a whole year a couple of years ago. So just being a little bit conservative with it and trying to get that right. And I mean, as you just mentioned, Benny Jacobs and Trent Dumont came in and they performed really well. And Benny Jacobs has had another really good game and really sort of feeling a lot more comfortable playing down back.
He's
when he came to the club, he probably saw himself more as an inside midfielder, but he's really learning his craft down the back line. And I know the back six are certainly loving him.
Now, I don't know whether you're on Twitter. I haven't had a look at you yet, or whether you're not. That's not a bad idea sometimes. Stay off it. But I don't know whether the banter in the change rooms has gone to the extent that the young fella is he's not the Glenn Maxwell of the Shinboners. He's surely not. The boys must have given him that name. He's called himself what? The Difference.
He wanted the big show, but that was already taken.
Who's that, Trent?
Yeah.
Oh, look, Trent, if I was Trent Dumont, I would have retired after his first three touches. The perfect AFL career. I don't know who gave him that. There was a long handball into the middle of the ground and really put him under pressure.
Sammy Wright, a bit of a hospital ball there.
Isn't he having a good season, Sam Wright?
He really stepped up on the weekend. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but the amount of times he got back as our spare and really influenced the play, and they got some really good tall targets in Tom Hawkins and Mitch Clark. So we know that both of them can take a grab, and Righty was right on top of it.
He has persisted with his league career and come up trumps. So Trent Dumont takes that handball under pressure, gets it off, does the little 1-2, assists in the goal. I think he might have got it to Benny Brown,
yep.
And then the next time he gets a ball with Matt, everybody just, I am going to roll into one some North Melbourne greats here. Picked up like Boomer, little shimmy like Phil Cracker, and then an audacious kick like Malcolm Blight. It was something else. It was unbelievable.
It's a great start to a career, Mark, I tell you.
I just walk off. It's like hitting a hole in one on the first hole. That's it, going home. Don't ever have to play golf again.
Now, Jamie, with you breaking your leg, and for us outsiders that have a passing interest, and I knew a bit about you because of the school connections and all that sort of thing, put into the leadership group is a great tick for you. And I must say that, you think of the leadership group, the obvious, the Petries and the Harveys by extension of their experience, Del Santo, Swallow and these sort of... Have you always had that background? Like at school, were you a school captain? Were you a prefect? Did you always assume leadership, or have you found that it's been thrust on you?
At school, I was a prefect at school in year 12, and then I was captain of our cricket team. Mind you, leadership in a cricket team is about, well, at that age anyway, it's about telling someone when they're bowling and when they're not bowling and moving someone from the slips to the covers, and that's about it. I think it's something that I've always had a passion for, and it's the age old question of, you know, are you born with leadership or do you learn it? And it's just something that I've always taken an interest in. And when I got to North, it wasn't necessarily something that I was focused on, especially from a young age. Mm. You know, when you're 18, 19, you're just worried about getting a kick and that's about it. But I just thought, you know, I just grew with the club, I suppose, and started to love the club and taking more pride in what was happening around the footy club, not just in my own performance, I suppose. And last year, I obviously wasn't playing any footy, but you know, I still felt like I had something to offer, you know, within the four walls of the footy club. And started this year, at, you know, we had a player vote, and you know, I came out with enough blokes liking me basically to put me in there.
Do you canvass? Do you electioneer like in the American elections? Right there, boys. Here's what's happening. We've got the vote for the leadership group. I'm pretty keen on it. So if I get in, it's free pizzas all around. Did you have a word to a couple of guys? Vote one, Jay McMillan.
I just flicked a few blokes $50 and said, vote that's me in, and that'll be it. Nah, it's not really done like that. And I think if you did do something like that, blokes would just see straight through you anyway. You know, leadership's about being who you are and just being honest with yourself, I suppose. And if you're going to try and put on a front to, you know, be all macho, I suppose, it's not really going to work, and they're going to see straight through these guys. So
unless you played with Brian Lake, he admitted this himself. He said he was the tightest bloke at Footscray. When he played at the Doggies, somebody said, you know, you're a strange cat, Brian. Tell us about yourself. He said, well, I am the tightest guy at the club. So maybe it would have worked with him. We want to know about the leadership group. It's something that football fans hear. It's a term. It doesn't mean all that much to a supporter to hear. It's sort of recognition of Jamie McMillan, and your hardcore North fans would certainly understand why Jamie McMillan, from an on-field sense, got that position. But for the general football public, it's not, for example, something in a footballer's resume. We don't say, Luke Hodge, 9 years, a member of the leadership group. It's very much an internal thing. How many members are there in North Melbourne's leadership group?
Seven.
Okay, so when you got the nod to be part of the leadership group, Were you taken aside? Is the group taken aside and spoken to as a group? What happens immediately? Well, tell us the whole process. So how did you find out you're in the leadership group?
As I said, we had a player vote. Players could vote for one player. They could vote for 10 players. It was as many as they felt they thought should be in the leadership group. We've got a leadership, I suppose you could call him a consultant, who works 2 days a week, Benny Robbins, who used to play at North and Brisbane. So he sort of facilitated the whole thing, and we had the vote, and then I reckon two or three weeks later, Scotty just got up and said, right, this is the results of the vote. The coaches obviously had some input into it as well. And then from there, we meet once a week as a group, so all seven of us meet with Benny Robbins, and we discuss issues from, you know, very minor, petty little things that happen around the club that, you know, every single club would have them, to, you know, the more serious stuff, to on-field, off-field.
So what would be a petty thing that happens at clubs? Does it relate to training? Does it relate to tidiness, tardiness?
A petty little, footy clubs are very, are all about being punctual and just blokes, you know, they're 5 minutes late, they're 10 minutes late, and it's sort of, you know, if I'm 10 minutes late to a meeting and everyone's got to wait for me, well, it's, you know, you're holding up 45 other blokes and all the coaches, and you have guys every now and again who sleep through an alarm or don't read the schedule correctly or go to the wrong place. And they, you know, it's not something that's, you know, necessarily going to get them dropped or get them kicked out of the footy club, but it's just something you just want to hit on the head straight up. And
so do the seven of you sort of wait till they get into the car park and it's dark and just surround the player?
Just hit him in the line. There's a few different things. I mean, in my first year, we had a couple of guys that were always late, and it was different things. I know you've heard about the Crows jumping off the pier, or don't know if they ended up doing it or not, but you know, I reckon I went off Kerford Road Pier probably 4 or 5 times in my first year at 6 a.m.
Excellent.
You know, you just do different little punishment sessions here and there, just at the end of training, do a couple of push-ups or whatever it is.
Who was the first time that you had to represent the leadership group, and were you comfortable with it? And what's it like? Because leadership group isn't based on seniority or age. Can be, I imagine, a little bit difficult maybe talking to somebody who's been around the club longer than you have.
Yeah, that it certainly is something that I suppose doesn't come naturally to a lot of guys. And I wouldn't say I've had to represent the leadership group in any such capacity other than probably, you know, just speaking up in team meetings a little bit more or having your input or running a meeting or something like that. And, you know, that can be challenging, especially you might be in a team review and, you know, you mentioned Boomer, who's played 20 years and 390-something games. And you've got to say, mate, what are you doing here? Or, you know, this isn't the way we want to play our footy. Or, you know, for someone who's played 60-odd games, saying that to a bloke that's knocking on the door 400, it can be pretty confronting. But, you know, the other half of that sort of feedback is the way that the other bloke takes it. And Boomer especially, he's been a leader at our footy club for so long and he's open to all kinds of feedback all the time and he continually just wants to get better. So, you know, it is a lot of the other guys, I suppose, at our footy club make leadership a lot easier.
We're speaking with Jamie McMillan, who's in for the hour in a new hour that we call the Whiteboard. And part of the dynamic is we've got Robert Shaw, who, of course, coached Adelaide and Fitzroy and spent an enormous amount of time in the box at Essendon and at Fremantle, but, of course, played himself. And, Robert, there were no leadership groups back in the early to mid-70s. Was there an unspoken hierarchy at a football club where the leadership group might not have been defined, but it existed never?
Oh, certainly not defined, but very much existed. And it was led by the captain. And, you know, I was very fortunate to play under the two Danaher boys. You know, one was cut short, Neil, with injury. And then, of course, Terry came on board. And
He was a young captain, Neil Danaher.
Yeah, he was 21. Terry was also a young captain.
How did that play out with some experienced men?
They were different captains. Terry was the ability to unite all types of players around him and lead by example. Neil was very articulate, very decisive, very clever, particularly the way he played the game. So they were entirely different, but no, we followed our leaders and the example they set. So there's not a lot of difference, really, Mark. But certainly there was no. We did as our told, did as we were told by our coaches, and there was never questioned. And leadership groups at that stage were your captain, and of course you followed what they did. But I was going to ask Jamie about input of leadership groups to the senior coach, as we were saying. You weren't in it 2 years ago, but it was publicised that the leadership group went to Brad Scott and thought that he wasn't hard enough on the group as a whole. Not, I don't know in what area, whether it was emphatic discipline, training standards or whatever. Would you care to sort of elaborate on that a little bit and the role of the leadership group in approaching, not so much that, but in approaching a coach about something you can see on the ground that's not happening? Is that a forum that's available to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I mean, I can't speak about that particular incident because I wasn't part of that. But every week, I reckon Brad would probably come into our leadership group meetings and we have a chat, and it's certainly a two-way conversation. It's not just him telling us what he wants to happen, but, you know, he's the kind of guy that he's always looking to improve as well. And so he's asking for our feedback. We speak as a playing group what we think perhaps we're getting away from a little bit from our game plan, and then we might go back to Brad and say, look, we feel like we're not doing this well enough, or we're not understand players have got too much confusion around how you've described something or how you've coached something. That's the sort of stuff we'll go back to him with at the minute, or what sort of I've done so far this year, I suppose you could say. But Brad's certainly open to that kind of information, and that, I don't know if you call it criticism, but how we can help him become a better coach, basically, because in turn that's going to make us a better side.
Do you find this can overstep the line a fraction with selection? Like you would love playing alongside certain players. That's just a natural part. You love him being in the team. And the players love this player being in the team. We've all experienced it. Do you ever find yourself imploring the coach to select a player. Look, Brad, we need, don't name him, but we need this player. He's really important to our fabric. Does it ever go to that extent, you feel?
Probably not to that extent, I don't think. I mean, the leadership group as such isn't on match committee, so basically the coaches
appreciate that.
I speak a lot to my defensive coach and say, he might say, how do you think you're going? Good. And I might say, mate, playing with so-and-so is just, he makes it so much easier for us when he's down there. He does this. We feel
the same sort of thing.
Good. Times it happens, like Brad will certainly come to, might be myself or Spitter or Zeebs, and say, how do you think, what's his name's going?
Yeah.
And they'll offer up their opinion, and it probably stays at that.
What
Brad does with that information, I suppose, is up to him.
And one of the other things I want to ask, if you've been 6 years, you spoke about Robbins being there for 2 days to coordinate it. How many different versions of leadership have you been through? Was Cameron Ling not there
last year
in a part-time role? Has it always been outsourced, or has there been times where you've run your own internal program the way North Melbourne want to do it?
So the last 2 years have been the only time we've done it. Before that, it was all inside the footy club. So I think we've had some coaches have sort of taken a little bit more interest in it and helped the guys. I mean, when I first got there in 2010, our leadership group was Brent Harvey, Brady Rawlings and Drew Petrie, and that was it.
Right.
And they sort of ran their own, not ran their own show, but they just, there's only three of them. So, they more had informal meetings and caught up every now and again with the coach. It's become a lot more formal these days, and it's got to the point now where probably leadership groups are valued a little bit more and have a little bit more impact, or try to anyway. And that's where it's been very different between Cameron Ling and Benny Robbins. Lingy was, obviously, he's fresh out of the game and he was obviously a very, very good captain in his own right. And Benny Robbins has come in. He's actually got a bit more of that education background himself. He's a psychologist. So he's got teaching us a little bit more about the way that we can implement our leadership or improve our leadership, whereas Lingy was a little bit more offering up his
how to lead on the field.
Yeah, that sort of stuff as well. Yeah, so,
right.
They were two different. They're two different people in their own right and offer different things.
Welcome. Oh, what was that? That sounded very loud. Welcome back to the White Room. Hopefully I didn't blow your ears out there as I did to mine. We've got Jamie McMillan from the North Melbourne Football Club in the studio with Robert Shaw, and we've done a bit of now and then, but the leadership group is what we are trying to demystify tonight. Jamie was made part of the leadership group at the end of last season, and he's given us a great insight into how it's formed, what its roles are. And now, Jamie, I'd like to know what it means to you as the footballer. Obviously, you're dead keen and North are dead keen to get you back out on the field. But even through NAB Challenge Round 1 training, do you view yourself a bit differently? Do you take it as an added responsibility? And do you think it'll ultimately have impact on your play?
I don't think it'll, in the short term, it won't have a massive impact on the way that I go about it. I think, Brad spoke to me once I'd been voted in, and he said, the reason you've been voted in is because the way that you've been training, the way you've been playing and what you do for us. So I suppose you don't change a winning formula. So, for me, it's just about going about it the same way. And I'm sure over time, as I start developing a few more strings to my bow in terms of leadership, that things might change a little bit, or the way I go about it, or it might just be simple things like being able to identify a few more on-field things and changing it there and then. At the minute, it's business as usual.
Now, of course, football clubs don't live in isolation. The AFL clubs see a fair bit of traffic on-field. Players come in from different clubs, and also off-field with assistant coaches and coaches bringing new ideas and different ideas from other clubs. I want to throw a couple of names at you, and you can tell the listeners what those people brought to the equation. And the first is Nick Del Santo, who came from St Kilda shortly after a successful era in terms of finals appearances and making two grand finals. And I know that Brad Scott, when he was announced a North Melbourne player, was very keen to make a point of what he would bring to the group apart from his football ability.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think after about a week you felt like he'd been there for 3 years. He fitted in really well, and certainly on field he's very smart, and he's a really good communicator, and he can sum up situations pretty quickly. I reckon that's what Brad was talking about. And then off field, as you said, when he came across the North, he just sort of experienced some pretty high success at the Saints, and he knew what it took to be successful. And that's not only on field but off field as well. And he was a big driver of our standards, and as well as I think he's everyone leads in a different way. And he was part of St Kilda's leadership group with Nick Rewalt there. And from all reports, he's a fantastic leader. And so he brought an insight into the way Nick went about it, and tried to sort of help us out that way too.
North Melbourne added an old favourite to their coaching ranks, I think, at the start of last season. He's got a great resume, and one would not be surprised to see him as a senior AFL coach. Lee Tudor came to the club, and it was considered quite a coup. Has he made a big difference?
Yeah, well, we spoke before about Trent Dumont calling himself the difference. Lurker calls himself the difference too. I was talking to him the other day, and he was saying it's something like for the last 6 years he's made the prelim final every year. At a minimum. So, there's certainly to get someone of his calibre was no mean feat, and he came in straight away, and just he reads the game of footy really well, and he teaches it really well. And I know I haven't had a whole lot to do with him in terms of the coaching side of things, given he's a midfield coach and I'm down back. But I live with Sean Attlee, who spent a fair bit of time with him, and he's helping him out a lot in terms of how to find the footy and running patterns and how to get involved in the game and how to work defensively as a unit. And that's what I think you look at the teams that he's come from. I know he was at the Saints and he was at Geelong and then into Sydney, and they're all really good defensive teams. So that's something that Lurker brings, and he's really good at teaching that as well.
Well, Mark alluded to 2013. I reckon you might have been eight or nine games, narrow margins. Couldn't find the handle on a win.
Do you want to hear the tally?
No, he probably doesn't, but go through it.
Geelong, 4 points lost. 3 point loss to Hawthorn at the MCG when you just had them all night. This was a great game of football.
Yeah, maybe the, that one too well.
Yeah, close to one of the best that North played for the year, but a loss. A 2 point loss to West Coast over there. A 1 point loss to Adelaide.
That was in Adelaide.
Yeah. AKA bad. The carriage factor.
Yes.
Good. The carriage. If only he could play against North every week. A 15-point loss to Gold Coast, which was really sort of the depths of despair. A 12-point loss at the Gabba to Brisbane, of course. A 1-point loss to Carlton.
Gee.
A 9-point loss to Adelaide, this time in Adelaide. And rounded it out with a 14-point loss to Hawthorn at the Docklands in a year where it was just hard. And most of the wins were comprehensive, including that spifflication of Melbourne at the MCG. Oh, no, it was at Docklands, actually. But then people started looking for reasons why, and leadership and on-field leadership in the last 15 minutes of the game came into question. It seems unfair, but how did the group not respond to the criticism? Because I'm sure the players... what do players do in terms of the media and just the general public? Do you protect yourself by not buying the paper or turning on the radio, or do you just listen to it all and, I guess, consume it and process it?
It's hard these days, with especially with social media, but... I try not to read a whole lot of it because, I think if you start reading too much of it, you can either get a big head or you can get yourself pretty down because, not everyone's going to be in your corner and what you're doing is not always right, and everyone's allowed to have their say on the issue. But in terms of that year, it was obviously, and listening to it back then, it brings back some bad memories. But, you know, they did say a lot of the criticism was around our on-field leadership. But as far as I know, I don't think our leaders read into that a whole lot. You know, every week we did a match review of all those losses, and I don't think once it was ever brought up about, you know, Scotty never said, oh, it was the reason we lost was our on-field leadership, or the reason we lost was we were playing the wrong way in the last 5 minutes, or no one did anything about it. It was more just, I think, a little bit of, I know he mentioned on the weekend one of the reasons we won was just because of our, you know, it was a more mature performance, and I think we had a lot of young guys playing the side who probably just hadn't been in those situations before. And I mean, you can argue, well, you know, 9 losses in a row or 9 losses in the year, probably you're going to learn a little bit. But I hope, you know, we've basically got the same team now that if we're in that similar situation, that we can put in better performances. So in terms of, you know, was leadership the only reason that we lost the game? I don't think that's correct. I think it's more the way we went about playing our style of footy and our game. You know, we went away from the Adelaide game in particular. I think from memory, we were 7 goals up, I reckon, halfway through the last quarter, and lost it maybe even more. And that wasn't due to on-field leadership. I know myself, I gave up 2 stupid goals that, you know, I just wasn't defending well. And that had nothing to do with the way Andrew Swallow was captaining the side.
Does, in a season like that, I sort of got a sense as soon as the season was over, for want of a better word, the curse was lifted, and North Melbourne haven't looked back since, as I expected. But during a season like that, when it gets to the 20-minute mark of the last quarter and you know the scores are close, do you start feeling the sort of the temperature rise and the heart rate lift because you know the football world's looking at you, and here we go again, another acid test. Whew, we haven't done so well. Does each loss build more pressure?
I'm going to say no. I don't think it really does. I think you're just in the heat of the battle, and you know, you obviously know the time of the game. You know if you're up or down, but I think you're just focusing on what you need to do at that particular point in time. And it's when the siren goes and you look up on the scoreboard, you're down by 3 points, and that's when you start to think, Jesus, we've done it again. So yeah, it's something now that I know. Leading into when the game's tight, I don't look up thinking, oh, you know, we've got a history of losing close ones. It's something now that we're confident that, you know, when the game is tight, that we've got the legs and we've got the maturity now as well, and the game plan and the understanding to know what to do at those particular times.
And just part B of that is, can we read into the selection of Waite, Higgins, some experienced players, just to distribute some outsiders into the team that bring a different perspective but also a steadying influence at times?
Yeah, I think any team wants to recruit someone that's going to make him a better side. And,
yeah.
You know, Wadey's kicked, he kicked 3 on the weekend. I think he kicked 7 against the Lions, so he's kicked 10 goals already. And Higo's been enormous, sort of linking up through half forward in the midfield. And they certainly bring some experience and also different ideas, you know, coming from different clubs. And Higo from the Bulldogs is brought across what he knows from there, and Wadey from Carlton likewise. So, you know, they've been tremendous additions, and they've definitely got Higo especially. I mean, he's had a fair bit to say, and it's been really good.
Now, we spoke about, you know, playing with people that you like to play with, particularly in the back line, so important. Tarrant's a big story, isn't it?
Touch wood for him, yes.
Yeah. He's a big story.
He's mate, watching Robbie Tarrant's game yesterday, I was sitting up in the stands and I was thinking, how well is he going? But to be honest, it didn't really surprise me at all.
It didn't surprise you, right?
No, not one bit. He's the way he's been training pre-season, and I know I was reading an article today about it, and he was saying, you know, he sat down with Brad Scott in his end of year meeting last year, and Brad said, do you want to play down back? And he said, yeah, let's go for it. And, you know, he's played, I think this might be his 8th year, I think, at the club, and he's played 40-odd games, and he's played up forward. I know he trialled down back for about 6 or 7 weeks and went back forward. So technically, he's like a brand new player for us down back. And, you know, to keep Tom Hawkins to what he did yesterday and the way he intercepted the footy and used the footy, ran off, and did all that sort of stuff, like it just didn't surprise me one bit seeing the way he's trained. So,
and it was difficult. A few weeks ago, it was a very difficult situation that the back line found themselves, particularly young Tippett on Walker. I'm going to ask you quite a difficult question. Was Given that Thompson's history of really beating Betts, it must have been a very difficult decision for the coaching. You know, do you let Betts go and move Thompson back onto Walker, you know, where his record is also outstanding? But nothing against young Tippett, but, gee, he's going to be important, Tarrant, isn't he, now because of his big body. And it just gives you that versatility that I didn't think you had against Adelaide with Scotty Thompson.
Yeah, and that's what I know. Scotty Thompson's had really good success on those smaller types.
Yeah. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
The decision to whether you move him or not, I suppose that's why the coaches get paid the big bucks, because you know it can make or break, I suppose. And that particular day, I know the other defenders we've sat down with Tibbo, and I reckon every single one of us have apologised to him for the way that, you know, we didn't help him out at all with how we were defending. And I think, you know, he got subbed off, and Scotty Thompson and Michael Fredo went on to Kurt Tippett and didn't really have a whole lot of luck either. But and then Eddie Betts gets off the chain as well, and Benny Jacobs went on to him and he shut him down a little bit, and it was certainly wasn't our greatest day. But you're right, though. I mean, with Scotty Thompson now, you know, over the last couple of years, he's been probably our number one key defender. And now with Big Robbie coming in, and he can sort of take that gorilla forward out of the way, the Tommy Hawkins type. Yeah. It just sort of frees Scotty Thompson up a little bit to come across and help out and play smaller and mix and match a bit.
Just on the season, the general public, and you won't agree with it, the general public would have a great passion for their own football clubs, but across the board, Port Adelaide, Fremantle, Sydney and Hawthorn are going to be very hard to dislodge out of the top four. That's obviously one of your goals. Where do you think your improvement has come or will come to force your way or force one of those sides out this year?
Yeah, it's certainly a good question. I think, you know, when once pre-season started, they've been the top four sides, you know, the competition. I think for us, we've always sort of had a really good offensive game, and we've been working really hard on our defensive game. And I think I look at, you know, when we sit in match reviews, and we're just that little bit off sometimes. And if we can just sort of clean up those lapses, different periods in the game that we can really tighten up, and if we can maintain our offensive and attacking game, I think we'll certainly be able to break into that top four. I mean, we played Port Adelaide last week, and I think it was 8 points or something. But I know certainly watching the review, I was sitting there thinking, you know, there's no reason why we're not just as good as this side, if not better. Either.
Well, that's half the battle. Yeah, believing you should be there.
That's it. So, and I think that's the other thing is you're spot on with just that belief. And I know that certainly after our finals performance last year, that the whole playing group has that belief.
I've got to say, from an outsider, from somebody who watches football for a living, I think you've got three of those four teams covered in something that's very important. That is depth. North has built up depth right across the ground. I think with the exception of Toddy Goldstein, and not saying that you don't have backup ruckman, but he's been wonderful this season, and nobody would be able to replace him because he's been the best ruckman in the comp. So that's... But beyond that, you've already been tested. No Nick Del Santo, no Daniel Wells. That brings into question some outside run and some of that poise that Nick Del Santo brings.
McDonald, McMillan, Black. Correct. McMahon can do a job still down back for them.
Now choices up forward in, obviously, Drew Petrie remains the elder statesman, but Ben Brown, and the question is, where to for Aaron Black? There are small forwards. Robin Nahas puts his hand up, and so it's whether you play two crummers with Lindsay and Robin Nahas. So I look at North Melbourne. I said it after the Port Adelaide game. I said, look, 4 points lost here in what might be an 8-point game at the end of the season when you're battling possibly for a top four spot. But beyond the result, gee, there's a lot to be pleased. And I thought one of the really pleasing elements of the season so far has been Kane Turner and Ben Brown appeared last year from off radar. Were they two precocious kids having a good couple of months, or are they long-term footballers? And the great news for North is they look to be 10-year players. So more depth.
Yeah, we've certainly been tested. And I know a couple of other names. You've got Lockie Hansen played his first game back on the weekend as well in the VFL. Mm. And, you know, he's going to be a really good addition when he comes back into our back six. And Nathan Grime is obviously on the recovery.
How far is he away?
I believe I walked in the club today and saw him taking a few little strides on the Alter G machine. So,
all right.
He's also going to have a microphonectomy where somebody's going to get the microphone out of his neck.
He does enjoy the
microphone. He loves it.
Yeah, so, he's, you know, obviously his first priority at the minute is just to get his health back and get the full range of mobility in his back and to full fitness. But, yeah, in terms of the depth, I suppose it has been, you know, on the weekend we see Trent Dumont step up and come in and just play his role. As we touched on at the start, Benny Jacobs has made the most of his opportunities. Robbie Tarrant's come in. You know, the list could go on, but certainly up forward.
Aisle three at Mitre 10, Mason Wood. If you went to Mitre 10 and asked for Mason Wood, they'd give it to you.
Mason Wood, I don't mind it. Yeah, see, Mason Wood's another one. You know, he's come in and I think he had one game to his name leading into this season. And, you know, his work rate's been outstanding and getting up and getting back. And then, yeah, Kane Turner and Benny Brown, the two you touched on. I mean, Benny Brown keeps performing for us, kicking goals, and Kane Turner's just a... You know, he doesn't mind putting his body on the line and taking a big hit or two. So I think it's just the ability that these guys come in and just play their role and do what's required of them. And, you know, so far, so good.
Well, welcome back. It is The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw, coach, assistant coach, player, mentor, Jamie McMillan, North Melbourne Leadership Group, and we were just talking during the break. 49 games in a row, Jamie, and you were about to play your 50th consecutive when you played Port Adelaide and you broke your leg. It was just bad luck, wasn't it?
Yeah, just bad luck, yeah.
I've got a couple of quick ones for you.
Hit me.
Do you watch football? Sounds a silly question.
Believe it or not, probably not as much as I used to. Yeah. When I first started, I watched as much as I could, and right. Now I've sort of... Yeah, I reckon I might watch.
It's a young generation thing, Mark.
Yeah, but it's also these team meetings.
Yeah, well, these team meetings.
They watch a lot of football, but it's all DVDs of the game.
When I watch football, I can't watch it to enjoy it. I watch it to try and
to work.
Find out what's happening and who's doing what. And
you're a student. That's how you passed your VCE. You studied and you worked at it.
So we do watch a fair bit of it during the week. So if it's a good game, I watch it. And
you like reading?
I despise reading.
So you haven't read the North story, the history of the North Melbourne Football Club?
No, I haven't, no.
You bloody well should, son.
It's a great story. I got given the
Are you into the history of this famous club? Because even though it didn't win its first premiership till 75, it is a famous club.
We've been over a fair bit at the footy club.
Have you?
Yeah.
I love the history of football. And I go back to the very beginnings. North used to be called Hotham.
And that is a long time
that
ago.
That is a long time ago. And Hotham used to play Essendon, and North Essendon were great rivals. And Essendon were, in the 1870s, considered a rural side. And Hotham visited Essendon one day, and Essendon visited Hotham one day, so played around Arden Street, and Hotham lodged an official complaint because the Essendon supporters stole all the sapling trees that Hotham had planted around the ground. So... nothing changes. Essendon came there and nicked their trees.
Doesn't read. I just can't believe he got through English.
He would have read at school.
These days they make a movie.
Yeah. They watch movies and pretend to read the book.
I did Shakespeare in Year 12, and there's always the play. So that got me through.
Yeah, you've got to be... Well, you got through, so it's okay, because sometimes the movie is different to the book.
Yeah, that's why you got to be careful. You can't be quoting the movie pretending like it's a book.
Well, the famous thing was we did To Kill a Mockingbird in what was then HSC. And the famous line that the teacher said is, do not, because everybody just watched the movie because it was in a long book, and the teacher, English teacher, said, do not watch the movie and base it on that, because, believe you me, if you did what happened a couple of years ago on the exam... and referred to Atticus Finch's Gregory Peck, who was the actor who played the main character in the book, you will not get a good... Apparently some student the whole time wrote Gregory Peck. I'd love to ask about a couple of players at the club. The great, we mentioned him before, Nathan Grime and Nani, who I've had the good pleasure of spending a couple of afternoons with, is quite the character. And just for the stories of the pranks he plays on his father, it's worth chatting to Nathan Grime.
Yeah, he's I think this is his seat in here that I'm warming. he does enjoy coming in here, but he hasn't been around the club a whole lot recently, just with his back injury. He was bedridden for, I think, a month there. But he's someone where, as soon as he walks in the room, he just lights it up. And he's always got something smart to say. And I tell you what, you can't get away with anything around him because he's the first to pick up on all that sort of stuff that you just might do something a little bit wrong, and he's right down your throat because he just loves it. But he's all the guys at the footy club absolutely love him, and he's really, really well respected as well in terms of his footy knowledge too.
Now there's a bloke, I think he's the equivalent of Dustin Fletcher. People think, oh, Boomer Harvey, but Michael Ferrito has been caught in some sort of time stasis or time freeze, because 4 years ago people looked at...
There's a bit of Benjamin Button about him.
Yeah, 4 years ago people looked at North Melbourne and said, you know what, he's been a great servant, wonderful decade, thanks Spud, but maybe as we rebuild and want to become a top four team, maybe not Ferrito. Well, 4 years later, in fact, just have a look at this weekend, how good was he down at Simmons? If he has the secret to not ageing, I want it.
He's been an interesting sort of probably 2 years for Spud. He had a fair few injury problems started last year and the year before with his off season. He hadn't had a pre-season, and this year he's been his first full pre-season in years, and it's almost like he's getting better with age. And as we were talking about before with Shorey, when he said, you know, do you ever go and speak to the coaches as to who you love playing with? Well, Spud for me is one bloke that
that's good.
You just walk taller when he's on the field down the back line with you.
Is he one of those players? Now, there are stories about players as they get, say, to 30 and they've had an injury or two and they finally discover something like Pilates or Vikram yoga, and all of a sudden they become like born-again Pilates spruikers, and everything's Pilates, and I can't get out on the training track until I do my Pilates.
Funny you mention it. He's just purchased himself a little Fitbit. Those things that count your steps.
Okay, well there you go.
And he could not be any more over it. So every day he's making sure that's charged and seeing what kind of sleep he's getting at night, and he's got the battles. You see him, everyone's sitting down at lunch and he's walking around with his plate of food just cutting some laps just to get his step count up for the day. So that's probably why his fitness is at an all-time high.
Last one for me, mate. You've had a great time at school and you're a wonderful APS footballer with Scotch College, but I tell you what, we're talking about individuals. Could you imagine several years ago when going to St. Kevin's and playing St. Kevin's at St. Kevin's with the two Scott brothers in the one side?
Yeah, I know. Well, my brother was at Scotch a couple of years after I was there, and I went down and watched him play one day at St. Kevin's, and I walked up to their sort of their function after the game, and the two Scott brothers were hanging on the wall there, and I thought, geez, imagine playing those two.
That would have been a good day, sir.
Especially if they were both in the middle, you'd probably be going, I might go play down the forward line, so they'd certainly be a force.
I'd say they'd grind you into the mud, but the closest I ever got to those schools was cycling along that path in between the two schools, and I didn't see any mud. But that, you boys, both the Scots and Jamie McMillan, Scotch and St. Kevin's, gee, did they have some nice sporting fields. Did you ever play cricket at St. Kevin's?
I did, yeah.
Now, that looks like the most beautiful deck of all time.
It's I can't say a good word about St. Kevin's. It is a nice deck, but I'm not going to lie. The Scotch Main Oval takes the cake, I think. It's a fair
cricket ground, Scotch,
yeah,
and footy.
It's the way that the grounds have been prepared, that oval's unbelievable.
Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Magnificent,
You've given
mate.
Us a real insight, not only into the leadership group, but how it ticks at North Melbourne. And I think we get a sense why North Melbourne is a pretty close-knit family, and close-knit families do things for each other. And hopefully that thing is top four and onto a grand final and premiership. Thanks so much, mate.
Well done, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Well
and hopefully we'll see you again later in the season. Thank you,
Mark.
Shorey.
You've done it again. Another fantastic.
The whiteboard.
Fantastic.
You know what we do with the whiteboard now?
We've got to get...
We get the cleaner, we wipe all that off, and we do it again next week.